it is okay to not be okay. That's for sure. You know, we're human, not perfect. It's on the logo. Right. But yeah, I mean, just to have that self-recognition and that's why I love, you know, being a member of a community. You know, whatever community it is, your Roadrunners Club, you know, your book club, Jen's book club, church, school, mm-hmm. you know, your whatever, you know, you play bridge with the ladies at night, whatever it is, that you're a member of a community, because there are going to be individuals in your community that are going to lean on you when they need it, or you might identify something with them that they don't even know they're going through. You'll see it in them. Or if, you know, if you're going through a rough time, you could lean on somebody in your community. And that's the whole premise behind what I've had the blessing to start, is these two communities, the law enforcement one that I have, and this Project Accounted For community, where, you know what, we're just normal people and we're going through life. And you know what, you want to log in there every day to get a little bit of inspiration, that's awesome. We're going to have guys and girls on there too, slapping you across the face to wake you up and say, listen, you know, don't spend 24/7 on social media. Make sure you get up and you go do something too to take care of yourself, because, you know, we don't want you to just be the best reader or have the strongest thumbs scrolling through your social media account. You know, we want you to wake up the next day feeling pretty damn good. So take care of yourself too.
Welcome to Inspiring Journeys. I'm Paul Stressner, and alongside me are the incredible Adriana Ferns and the unstoppable
Terry Nelson.
Hey everyone, it's Adriana here. From a challenging path to becoming a fitness instructor, I've learned that every step counts in the journey to better self.
Hey, what's up everyone? I'm Carrie Nelson, your obstacle course crushing adaptive athlete warrior, Spartan races, major marathons. I'm breaking barriers and redefining what's possible.
And I'm on a mission to run a 5K in every state, shining a spotlight on the charities that make a difference in each community. But on Inspiring Journeys, we're not just about conquering personal goals.
Our podcast is a celebration of resilience, determination, and the transformative power of personal growth. We'll be sharing stories of individuals who have faced challenges head on and emerged stronger.
Yeah, you know, life is a series of obstacles, and I've learned to turn them into stepping stones. Let's inspire others to do the same.
That's right. And it's not just about our awesome guest stories. It's about yours, too. We want to ignite that spark within you, encouraging every listener to embark on their unique and inspiring journey.
So get ready to lace up your shoes, break down those walls, and join us each week as we explore the extraordinary paths that lead to growth, triumph, and ultimately an inspiring life.
This is Inspiring Journeys. Let's run, climb, and soar together.
I have a disclaimer I want to announce at the top. I'd like to apologize ahead of time if this episode is low-key, boring, and dry, but we'll do what we can.
That's right. I think it's going to be the complete opposite. Absolutely. If it's low-key and dry, we're doing something wrong.
Exactly.
That's for sure. Yeah. If they only knew the true content that went on behind the pre-meet the other day, you know, it had something to do with asparagus, I can tell you that much. We'll just drop that bomb on everybody. There's a lot of asparagus talk. Yeah, things got weird right away.
Yeah, right away. Yeah, right out of the bat. Right out of the gate. Yeah. But yeah, welcome everybody to a new episode of Inspiring Journeys, copyright of Tom Scally. Tom Scally. I'm conflating Eddie Scally. I just was mentioned throwing a shout out to Tom. All right. And yeah, this is exciting. This is our first live stream. So yeah, thank you for anybody that's joining us. Hmm. As usual, we'll start off with what we're grateful for. And Carrie, would you like to do the honors to start?
Today, I am grateful for early morning coffee and downtime. like that first half an hour of the day is just, it's nice to be able to kind of just set your mind and refocus everything and just kind of, you know, just get ready to approach the day. So I am grateful for today, for just those simple mornings of that half an hour of coffee and getting ready for the day.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, that lost hour of sleep, right?
Daylight savings.
Yeah.
I know. I forgot that it was daylight savings. So I woke up at 4:30 and I went out to get my cup of coffee and I was like, why didn't my coffee pot turn on? And it's because I didn't set my pot to daylight savings. So it still was like another hour before that thing was going to go off. So I manually started it.
Yeah. Lost number one of the day.
I mean, I was like, I had to wait a whole 10 minutes. That's not good.
So what about you there, Paul? What's your what are you grateful for today?
Yeah, I'm grateful for communities. I'm talking about positive, impactful ones. Because I have like a lot of different aspects of my life. There's like I have my well, the gym. It's like a family there, Bristol Total Fitness. And then we have like the running community is always like so positive. It doesn't matter like what level of running you're at. And I'm also a writer, and I belong to a writing club, Lit Arts RI. And we have a lot of like Zoom sessions and get-togethers at the book club place. And it's a lot similar to running, where it's like a solo thing, but then you can all gather together too as a group, and you just like feed off each other's energy. So that's an awesome community. And then, like, not to mention the CLS family, because that's just incredible. Personal development. Yeah. And everybody does all different things. And you pick up something new from everybody and talk about feeding off people's energy and stuff, and, you know, helping people too. It's so great. Yeah. You get a lot of love and support, you know. And then, of course, that'll bring us to you, Eddie.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those, you know, for those of you out there that are, you know, buddies of mine that are first to the Inspiring Journeys podcast, what Paul's talking about is that Arts RI is a play on Arts Rhode Island. Paul's from the Rhode Island area. You can tell from his the old name of this podcast used to be the Road Runner, RHODE. Yeah. So he you know, little witty puns on where he's from. So and then he had mentioned also the CLS community. CLS is a community that was run and started by Craig Siegel. He's an author of The Reinvention Formula. Awesome book that I think all of us here have had the opportunity to read. I know for sure myself and Paul have read it. We're part of Craig's CLS community. And, you know, I'll throw Craig a plug right now, and the Reinvention Formula book to everybody that's listening right now. Awesome, awesome read. You know, it's quick. It's on my reading level. You know, like when I talked to Craig about it, I said, you really did keep it on that keep it simple, stupid kind of level.
Exactly.
For me, you know, it was a really quick read, a lot of chapters, but every chapter it's no longer than maybe like 3 or 5 pages long. So you can blast through it. And it really is, it's relatable. So it's definitely a plug that I'll throw out there. I know it's early in this discussion, but definitely pick up that book. Go, you know, grab it from Amazon or wherever else you could purchase it. It's author is Craig Siegel, Reinvention Formula. So I'll throw that plug out there now. So what am I grateful for right now at 3 p.m. on daylight savings on a Sunday? I have to throw out there, it's my dad's birthday, 70th birthday. Whoa, grateful for him. So we're gonna be, when we log off here, we're gonna be heading over to mom and dad's house for probably for some like chicken, some blackout cakes, sing happy birthday. But I'm especially grateful for this opportunity to be here on Zoom, because I only have to get dressed up from the waist up, and everything else from downstairs I'll leave to the viewer's imagination. But I can tell you that I get the chance to go to the office today with my Uggs
slippers, there you go.
Which is pretty amazing. Yep. So so grateful for being here, and you know, all jokes aside, I'm appreciative for the communities that I'm a part of. You know, this new Project Account of Four community that's only literally 2 months old. Also a private law enforcement community on Facebook that I'm a part of, that's grown to, well, it's about 4,000 members on there, as well as just the men and women in the New York City Police Department, as well as those in the Volunteer Fire Service that I had the blessing of working beside for so many, many years. I'm extremely appreciative for the security and the safety that they provided me day in and day out. And allowing me to have the opportunity to be here right now, not just to tell their story, but to also build a platform for them. And I'm grateful for those, specifically those who have given their lives for the lives of others to make this world a better place. So, I thank them tremendously.
Very well said. So, so we could like dig into some of your backgrounds now. Yeah, you grew up. You grew up in Long Island.
I did. Yeah. I was. You know, family was from Brooklyn. First few years of my life were out in Queens. We moved out to Long Island. You know, for those of you that don't really know the geography of Long Island, Long Island runs from technically Brooklyn to Montauk. So you have Kings County, Brooklyn, You have Queens County, then you have what is really dubbed like Long Island. When you talk to anybody that lives in the five boroughs, like Manhattan, Staten Island, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, they don't associate with Long Island. Long Island is really Nassau and Suffolk County here in New York.
Well, I should also mention that yeah, we need to specify that because people outside of New England, especially like when I was in the Navy, they'd ask where I was from, and I'd say Rhode Island, and they say, "Is that New York?" And I say, "Yeah,
Oh, yep.
you're thinking of Long Island." Ah, same thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of
We're
confusion.
a unique breed here out on Long Island, that's for sure. And I'm very, very proud about for living here for so long. Parents moved us out to the island probably in 86, from Queens. And this is where I've been since. This is home, awesome people. I mean, there's nothing like summer on Long Island. We have the best of all worlds. We definitely have our four seasons, but easy access to the beaches from June, July, August, September. We've had some long summers now, but great place to live and grow up. A ton of us though are making that move, packing up and going down south for obvious reasons.
Florida, yeah. But yeah, actually, I was there maybe a year and a half ago because a cousin I was close to passed away, and
Sorry to hear
she
that.
was originally from Brooklyn, and she was living down in Texas. But her daughters threw a celebration of life party, and it was on Long Island, and I stayed for the weekend. I stayed in Amityville, so
Oh yeah, that's really close. Yep. All right, very close by.
And of course, I had to drive by the Amityville Horror House, which looks nothing like the house anymore on purpose. They got too many people like me driving by to check it out because,
it's almost like you want to put a bid on it. It's actually in a beautiful, it's in a on a beautiful block in a great neighborhood.
it's like a regular neighborhood. Yeah.
It's like just wild to think that you're looking through the windows where like all these horrors happen,
Exactly.
like literally. But Been here for my whole life. I mean, between Queens and Long Island, I have two wonderful parents that are thankfully still with us. Like I
That's
said earlier,
awesome.
my dad turns 70 today. My father was a New York City firefighter for about 35 years of his life. My mom, she spent a long time as a teacher's assistant with Nassau County BOCES. So the school that she worked for, their student population was very medically, physically challenged. A lot of students confined to wheelchairs. They had medical diagnosis. And the reason why I bring my parents up, and I'll bring up the rest of my family too in a little bit, is I don't have one of these stories, one of these historic stories that where I had a lot of trials and tribulations growing up as a kid. I actually like really appreciate my folks so much for the sacrifices that they made to make my life, my brother's life. My younger brother, only a couple of years younger, he's a New York City fireman also. But we had a really good upbringing, and I really do tip my hat to my parents for doing that. I mean, life's not easy for anybody. Regardless of how you're raised, there are your day in and day out struggles. We have a blue collar family. Dad wasn't just with the FDNY. He was taking on, two, three jobs at a time to make ends meet. Mom was home for the beginning part of my brother and my life to raise us, and then she went back to work. Who had medical issues going on, and they made it work. And I really do. I'm grateful for the both of them for the sacrifices that they've made. We've all been in relationships in our lives. We know that they're not easy. So they were able to put their heads together. They've been together now. They've been married since 77. And it's a testament to their love and devotion for one another through thick or thin, that message really goes out to my mom because she's a saint. And they're still here with us. I still have my father's parents are still alive, 94 and 93 years old,
That's incredible, yeah.
and I bring up them too because they, they're originally from Brooklyn, and they've been living in Brooklyn almost their entire lives. They just came out to the island recently too. And when I say recently, I mean within the last 5 years. But my grandfather, 94 years old, retired. He had gotten hurt, had fallen through the floor and some stairs. He was a firefighter, with a lieutenant actually with the FDNY. So that sense of service to our community in the Scally household has been going way back in time. I mean, even back to my mom's father serving in the Navy, similar to yourself. He was in the Navy during the Korean War. My grandmother was a school teacher at St. Edmund's in Brooklyn. You know, my cousin Matt served in the United States Army combat vet deployed. So there's a lot of military. My uncle in the Army. So when you grow up in that type of environment where, you know, my parents really instilled the, you know, my three pillars of God, country, and family on me. It's just, it's a blessing to be able to be here today and still living by like that code that, that they raised me in, you know? So, I mean, at 10 years old, my parents had both my brother and I at church. We were altar servers. So they had us serving our community really early in life, you know? So it's a testament for why I'm here and, you know, why I joined the Volleys back in 99 at the fire department and why I became a police officer in 2002. It really is a testament to my parents. So I'm extremely thankful for them. I know I gave them a lot of hell growing up. That's for sure. You know, it wasn't always, you know, Eddie Scally wasn't always rainbows and unicorns. That's for shit sure. So I guess I shouldn't curse. So well, that one slipped out.
Oh yeah, you can.
That's
okay.
That one flew past the goalie.
That's all right.
But, you know, I've given mom and dad a ton of gray hairs. I've probably taken thousands of dollars out of their pocket just for them to help me correct my mistakes. But I gotta say they've really they're really good people, and I'm grateful every single day for mom and dad, what they do for me, my brother, my girlfriend Chrissy, my sister-in-law, and our families. They're good people to have in your corner, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then we were talking, well, three of us were talking before you had mentioned that you were in the volunteers when 9/11 happened, and
right,
you were down at the towers yourself.
So what wound up happening was I had gone away to school back in 98 to Sacred Heart up in Connecticut, in Fairfield. After a year up there, I transferred home. I was going out to school at St. Joe's in Patchogue, and where I was studying. My degree was in mathematics. But my senior year of college, I had already been in the volunteer fire service since 1999, and you know, September 11th had happened. So I was substitute teaching that morning on September 11th, and the school knew that I was a volunteer firefighter. I got up, I left, I responded to my volunteer firehouse. I watched the events of 9/11, those initial events where the second plane that hit the tower unfold on TV, like millions of us did, right? Mm-hmm. Then my fire department sent the heavy rescue truck into Ground Zero. I wasn't on that. I wound up getting on a light rescue vehicle, and we were staged over at Aqueduct Racetrack. Oh, actually, you know what? It was Belmont Racetrack. And yeah, our duties were to stand by, and we were going to be responding into Ground Zero. You know, this is on Tuesday, September 11th. We were going to be responding into Ground Zero to assist with survivors. And then we know how that went. It was really, you know, those individuals, the victims of the attacks that did survive, that were able to run away, did, and there really were not many survivors that were, you know, actually removed from the debris. So we sat there we sat there in standby for almost 24 hours. But then for the next 4 months, a couple of days during the week, my volunteer fire department was asked by the federal government to go and partake in the recovery operation. So myself, countless other members of my local fire department, we were teamed up with the FBI, with Joint Terrorist Task Force, the NYPD's bomb squad, the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. And our duties were to take our heavy rescue vehicle up to Staten Island to the landfill at Freshkills, and they would cart debris to us. But my specific duty was any vehicle, whether it was a motorcycle, a sedan, a truck, a pickup truck, fire trucks, ambulances, police cars, and some of them were still somewhat intact. Other vehicles were just completely demolished and crushed due to the weight of the building, where it was basically the size of like a small coffee table. And we would sit there and meticulously open up these vehicles with the jaws of life. And the NYPD's auto crime division was there to try to record VIN numbers that were on these vehicles. And there was a lot of, you know, discussion. You know, September 11th had sparked a lot of memories from those that were still around in 93 from the first attack on the Trade Center. So, you know, there was a thought that perhaps there was some sort of vehicle-borne IED that was planted in a car in the basement of the Trade Center. But we all know that that didn't come to fruition. But what we did find, fortunately and unfortunately, we did recover the remains of a lot of victims of the World Trade Center attack on September 11th over the course of those few months that we were down at the landfill. And then, just to fast forward a little bit in my career, in 2011, the latter part of 2011, I got transferred to the citywide missing persons squad of the NYPD in the rank of detective. And I still talk to a lot of my buddies there in that office. I was assigned there for almost 4 years. Yeah, 3 or 4 years before I got promoted to sergeant. And my main duties were to search for missing persons. Some of those persons were just runaways. Other persons were actually kidnapped or abducted or being trafficked. But those many years later, after 9/11, we're talking 10, 11 years later, DNA evidence was starting to surface where some of the remains that were found were starting to get identified even in 2011, 2012,
Wow,
2013.
that's
So
crazy.
that recovery work went on for such a long period of time, and it really is a testament to the diligence of the members of the police department to try to give families the closure that they needed. Yeah, but that's I mean, that's really my background with the Volunteer Fire Service. I have to say, I love the time that I spent with the volunteer fire departments over the course of my early adulthood. I moved from one department here at home to another one when I where I moved and bought a house where I raised my kids in the beginning part of their life. But the men and women in those volunteer fire services, they're committed, they're dedicated. They don't get paid for anything. These are just our neighbors that live next door to us. At any given moment of their day or night, that pager goes off and they're running out of their house to go help a member of their community that they may or may not know. They're putting their lives on the line for no paycheck. So I give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, I mean, working a majority of my career in journalism, right? I've interacted with you guys on countless calls, right? Like usually if there's something happening in the community, the news isn't usually too far away in a lot of those situations. And my question to you, because I know for September 11th, when September 11th happened, a lot of us, that photogs and reporters that went down to Ground Zero, definitely didn't come back the same way that we went down there. It changed us from what we saw, what we covered, having to see what you guys went through, having to see what families went through, and even beyond September 11th, and seeing, the scenes that you guys have to go into, and just the really sad situations that, again, as volunteers, like you're putting yourselves into these situations where you're experiencing all kinds of trauma and sadness and grief and loss. And sometimes I've been at scenes too where it's been people that are family of volunteer firefighters or family of the police officers that are in the town, and it's exponentially harder to get through and process what needs to be done in order to get things done. And so for you guys, how do you handle that, like, on a daily basis? Because I know for as journalists, we tend to stuff it down inside. Like we're really good at like kind of like sectioning off that part of the things that we experience. Like when I was in school, our professor always told us as photographers to look through the screen as if you're watching a movie. And like that way, there's some kind of separation between what you're looking at through that screen and the reality of the world to help cope with it. You're in it. Like there is no separation screen there. So how do you guys handle that trauma and all that emotion that you're going through?
Right. So, I mean, just to go a little further with, I guess, like my career before I come back to that answer is, in 2002, I got hired by the NYPD. And just like every man and woman in blue in the New York City Police Department, we all went through the same police academy. I had come out, I walked a foot post, I was in a radio car answering 911 calls. I was in an anti-crime unit in plain clothes. And then I was blessed to go to the detective squad for a few years investigating. The most trivial crimes like a petty larceny all the way up to homicides up until about 2011. And that's when I went to the missing person squad. And then in 2015, I got promoted to sergeant. I went back to supervise an anti-crime unit in South Jamaica, Queens, and then I became one of the few supervisors for the Queens South Gang Squad, and that's where I wound up retiring out of last August. And the reason why I bring that up is this: there are so many different units within the police department and even the fire service too, right? Where, police officers, firefighters, EMTs. I mean, I don't know how these men and women in the medical profession, the EMTs and the paramedics, how they do it day in and day out. They're probably one of the least thanked professions out there in the first responder world. You couple them with even the dispatchers, right? The amount of traumas that the dispatchers have to endure on a daily basis. But these EMS workers pushing an ambulance, taking care of, of patients 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're so underpaid and underappreciated. And then they still go out there every single day doing God's work to help, our fellow man and woman. But I think what works for a lot of us is humor, So it's kind of like
I get that.
we're able to not just compartmentalize what we're doing at work, right? And trust me, it does affect individuals differently. There are some of us that are able to go to work, come home, and do 20, 30, 40 years of this and potentially be, theoretically unaffected by it, and they're able to, compartmentalize. This is work. This is home. I know this is the job that I was called for. I have to, somebody's calling for help, regardless of them stubbing their toe or having somebody shoplift from their store or engaging in gunfire. I know that that's where I have to respond to. And there are some of us that are able to do that and come out mentally unscathed. And then there, and it's completely fine if you're on the other end of the spectrum. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here too, with my, my law enforcement private group, as well as my public group for the, for the public, is to understand that if you're able to identify that you're going through stresses and what you've seen at work, right? That weighs on an individual, and that's all right. It's completely okay. It doesn't make you, whether you're able to compartmentalize or you're able to deal with the stresses of the job, or not, it doesn't make you better than the person who can or can't. But it takes a real strong individual to reach out to, either, even if it's the guy that's, changing next to you in the locker room, and just to chat about the day and what you're going through, or you take it a step further to call a professional. It's completely all right to finish up and wrap up your tour. Whether it's after 8, 10, or 12 hours, you put your head down in your lap for a second. You say, "Holy shit, that was pretty fucked up, what I just saw." And that feeling might not even happen immediately.
No,
I mean,
it's been days
it could
or
take
months.
days, weeks, years. I mean, it could resurface even when you're retired. You have members of the police, fire, and EMS community that they're on the go, day in, day out, working these shifts. They're constantly, their adrenaline is constantly moving. And then all of a sudden, whether retirement happens because of an injury or retirement happens voluntarily, once that all stops, now you're kind of replaying a lot in your head. Your phone's not ringing anymore. You're not answering a radio to go to a 911 call. You're not jumping in the car or the ambulance or the fire engine or the fire truck to respond to an emergency. Your life kind of slowed down. And that's great. You've earned it. You made your bones. You deserve to be retired. You paid your dues, but you kind of still are wondering, all right, what do I do now? What do I do now? Now that life slowed down, and that could be when those stresses might start weighing in on you, or it never happens. I pray for all of us that we don't go through life having to worry about that. But at any given time, if that does happen to an individual, whether you're a first responder or not, it's completely okay not to be okay. One of the phrases on my logo for Project Accounted For is we're human, not perfect. That's actually one of the greatest things about being a human, is we're completely imperfect. And it's a matter of identifying those imperfections, identifying what causes you stress, identifying what's weighing on you heavily, looking at yourself in a mirror, not comparing yourself to what you see on social media. I mean, social media is so toxic because you have everybody, nobody's putting up there what they've done wrong in life. Nobody's out on social media publicizing like, "Hey, I just cheated on my wife," or, "Oh, look, I just, cheated on my taxes," Look at all the money I spent gambling. Look at all the money I lost gambling. You know, take a look at my crops that aren't growing. Nobody puts that stuff out there. It's fake. You know, 99% of social media is staged. It's fake. You have a lot of people who will, you know, take pictures with their wife and their kids smiling, but meanwhile, behind closed doors, there's domestic violence going on, or there's fighting, there's financial trouble. We, as humans, specifically, you know, as human beings, we're looking at social media thinking that it's all true. You know, it's a fairy tale. It's fictional. You know, this isn't a nonfiction book we're reading. You know, I say it all the time. I'm like, the only device that you really need to go to every day is the mirror in front of you. Take a look at yourself, you know, stop scrolling, take a good look in your eyes and inside your soul and say, all right, I'm doing pretty damn good today. Right. And you get out there and you go do it. Or you say to yourself, wow, I'm kind of struggling. It's time for me to pick up the phone and reach out for some help. You know, whether it's a friend, a social media platform where that you can lean on, a road runner, a running club like you guys have, or a therapist, a counselor. You know, you reach out to that professional. You know, get some gym therapy. And there's no rubber stamp that's going to correct everybody in one shot. We're all unique, and I think that's going back to your question. That's what winds up happening with members of the first responder community is we're able to somewhat compartmentalize it. Those of us that can get through the day in and the day out, you know, we're able to do it because of the men and women that we work with. It's we're going into these scenes and we're coming out of them. And a lot of times we're, you know, having like a grab ass back, you know, backroom humor. We're joking around, but you know, we're not making fun of a situation. It's just, we need to lighten the mood. For us, because it's a lot of the things that we see on a daily basis are pretty messed up. You know, I mean, just take a look at Netflix. Probably some of their biggest viewership is on these real life homicide, murder, kidnapping shows, you know, and a lot of the public goes to that for entertainment.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, which is it's wild.
That's a soft spot for me.
Oh my goodness. Could you imagine being like the victim of a murder looking down from heaven saying, oh my God, my homicide wasn't entertaining enough. It doesn't get enough views. Like, how crazy is that? That we've publicized and we've made it into entertainment, somebody else's death. But meanwhile, you know, people in law enforcement or the fire service or EMS, you know, like I said, whether they're working 8, 12, 24 hours in a row, they could be handling 30 of these traumas or incidents in a tour, in one single tour. You know, I mean, gratefully, as civilians, you know, we might have one, maybe two major incidents in our life that require us to pick up the phone and call 911 in a true emergency situation. You know, somebody's breaking into my house in real time. I have to pick up the phone, call 911. I mean, listen, there's other solutions, like, you know, go grab your pistol and we'll handle it that way. But, you know, where like it's a true emergency that you have to pick the phone up and call 911 in real time. On the other end of that phone, though, are cops, firemen, EMTs, paramedics. They're going to help you out, you know, 8, 10, 30 times in a tour. You know, I mean, I know for a fact, and I'm saying this number factually, you know, a police officer working a 4 to 12 shift, 3 p.m. to almost midnight in the NYPD, pushing a radio car next to his or her partner, even in some of the slower commands, they could be answering 20 to 25, sometimes 30 jobs a night, a night. And meanwhile, the average American citizen might have one or two incidents where they have to pick up the phone and call 911 in their whole life.
Lifetime.
So, right. So, like, you know, listen, and don't get me wrong. Every single day for me at work was amazing. Like, yeah, and I know there are a lot of guys and girls out there like me. There are a few that really did not like going to work. But for me, I enjoyed it. I loved it. It never, ever felt like a job. I was getting paid to do something that I really loved to do. And it was not just that it felt great helping people and putting bad guys in jail or prison, but it was the cops and the detectives and the sergeants and the men and women in blue next to me that made going to work so much fun, you know, but life gets in the way sometimes too, you know, cops, firemen, EMTs, paramedics. We're not just dealing with those traumas, those 911 jobs that we're going to at work, but now at the end of our tour, or even when we're working, you know, we still have home life that we have to take care of. So we're coming home. We have, some of us are having domestic issues ourselves. Some of us are having financial issues ourselves. Some of us have vices, you know, drinking, drugs, gambling. You know, I mean, just because we we put a uniform on in whatever title you have, doesn't mean that you're not susceptible to life's vices as well. So you have guys and girls going home after dealing with a full tour of trauma, or just, you know, even if it's not some sort of major emergency where people's, you know, limbs are getting chopped off, you know, or shot, but like you're walking into a couple's house and they're having a domestic argument right in front of you. And, you know, here you are, you're playing referee, you're playing, you know, lifesaver, you're playing almost like judge, mediator, lawyer, all, and you're wearing one hat of a police officer, and then you have to go home and, you know, you have your own issues with your wife, or your own issues with your husband, or your own issues with your partner, you know, whatever. I mean, it's it takes its toll. And I think that's where it's the real life. I think that real life problems that we all have is just men and women, just, you know, not cops, firemen, EMTs, but just men and women, big boys and girls. We have big boy and girl problems. We have big boy and girl debt. We have big boy and girl arguments, you know, that coupled with what we saw at work, you know, could be a recipe for disaster, right?
Well, not even what you saw, but like when you get a call in, there's also the anticipation of like, what am I walking into? You don't know if it's going to be something nasty. So you probably, you might get, I don't know, maybe you can answer it, you might get like all nerved up, you know, not knowing what you're going to be walking into.
Sure. I mean, that happened. I mean, especially early on in the career, you know, that happened a lot for me because, you know, I wasn't experienced enough. You know, you kind of like a little more jittery, but that level of anticipation, that little bit of nervousness, that little bit of fear that you have when you're, you know, crossing through the front threshold of somebody's door, or, you know, walking up the stairs of like the housing projects, or in a dark back alley, that's actually good to have. Because if,
that's true,
you know, if you don't have that little bit of fear in the back of your head, or the little bit of those hairs standing up on the back of your neck, it could mean that you're getting too complacent, and you're going to be walking down that hallway thinking, just anticipating that nothing's going to go wrong. So to have that little bit of fear, or to be a little bit on edge, I think it's good because it keeps you on your toes and it keeps you aware, right?
Yeah, 100%.
But,
I agree with that.
But that could play on your, you know, just experiencing that 8 times a day, you know, the ups and the downs, the ups and the downs, the ups and the downs, that could put a lot of stress on your heart too. You know, it could put a lot of stress on your mind and on your body. So yeah, I mean, that does happen to a lot of guys and girls too.
Yeah. Now that brings us to like the mental health issue. Cause I know with the military, we actually covered a veteran from 22 Too Many, and she had bad PTSD, and she went to get, while she was active, she went to get help, and then they kind of like outed her, and she was kind of ostracized. So then after that, she was embarrassed, and she really needed help, but she didn't go back again. So it really affected her. Now I'm assuming in the police force and fire department, it's kind of taboo to get mental health.
I mean, I tell you, the so back in 2019, right at the right in the heart of like this, you know, the anti-police rhetoric that was going on in the culture of America, we saw a huge uptick in suicides in the law enforcement community, specifically in the NYPD. But that was resonating throughout the country. It was horrible to see. And that's when I started my closed Facebook platform for strictly active or retired members of the law enforcement community. But what we were seeing then was trying to break the stigma of letting cops know that it is all right to understand that you're human, and that to feel stressed or to feel depressed, to feel that anxiety build up, whether it's because of what you're seeing at work, what you're feeling from the media, what the media is portraying, or what you're going through at home, it is okay to make a phone call and get yourself some help. But you're right, that culture, that like that man up on Project Accounted For, and in my closed group, I did a video called Man Up. And that man up type of culture, it's, you know, you're going through some problems, man up, suck it up, you know? Or you stubbed your toe, suck it up, man up. You know, you're having a hard time paying your bills, man up, suck it up. Like, nobody cares, you know? And I mean, listen, in reality, like, I'll be the first one to tell you, nobody really does care. You have to care for yourself, you know? I mean, we have people beside us that are going to try to help you out, but in the long run, they can't drag you to safety. They can't drag you, you know, to get your mental health. You have to be willing to do it on your own. You know, the same goes with any sort of addiction. You have to have that will, that desire, that drive inside to get yourself help too. But it was, and it still is. There's a lot of guys and girls, specifically male cops, male firemen, that I see that think it kind of, it's belittling to admit that you have some sort of issues. And listen, you don't have to go out and wear this trauma, wear the stress, wear this depression like a badge. You don't have to walk around with it on your sleeve. You know, it's nobody's saying that you have to go on social media and talk about it. Mm-hmm. No, you could go get treatment in silence. You pick up the phone, go to the back of your insurance card or whatnot. Reach out to somebody who you know has gone through it. Reach out to your counseling unit at work. Pick up the phone, go get yourself some help. That's probably the most man up move somebody could make.
Exactly.
Is reaching out and asking for their own help. You know, so like, you know, we have to try to change that culture of, you know, hey, suck it up, man up, take it on the chin to, all right, you know what? If you're going through trouble, the biggest man up thing you could do is get yourself the help, mm-hmm. you know, but also the law enforcement agencies and the first responder agencies that employ those men and women that are seeking help, they need to be on board too, because for cops specifically, you know, listen, we make a good living. Our paycheck's pretty decent. I know in the agency I worked for, of course, we will all say it could always be better, right? We're always looking for more, mm-hmm. but it's good. It's a good job, you know, and we get compensated pretty well. But on top of that paycheck in my department, you know, if you have an arrest and you're processing your arrest and it goes past your tour, you have to bring the subject down to court or down to central booking. Or if you have a detail, a parade or a demonstration or a riot that's occurring on your day off, or like election duty on your day off, and you have to come in and do overtime, that overtime also is nice to make, right? It pads your paycheck a little bit. So in the event that a member of the service reaches out, just because, listen, nobody's saying they have to be diagnosed with anything. I think as a society, that's another problem. We label too much, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But if you reach out for some sort of psychological assistance, to talk to a counselor because you're going through some stress, you're just going through some shit. I mean, we're human beings, right? There shouldn't be the fear of we're going to automatically have your firearm taken away, because now you can't show up. Now you can't show up to work and perform your regular duties on your regular tour. It might not affect your regular paycheck, but you can't make that overtime, which you might need. I mean, it's 2024 America. I mean, one bag of groceries for me sometimes costs me $80.
Right.
One bag of groceries. You know, a gallon of gas here on Long Island right now is $3.15 a gallon. You know, it's spiked up over the last couple of years. There were times it was almost $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
You know, so some of us were, you know, putting our kids through school. Who's got kids in college? Who on our own are going through school? We have to pay a mortgage. We have, you know, one kid, two kids, no kids. We're paying rent. It costs money. So now you got to tell a cop, listen, if you reach out for some sort of psychological services, we're going to take your pistol away because you're getting treatment. Well, that's not why have that blanket statement for everybody. You know, if this guy is reaching out, he or she might need it. You know, it might not affect how they're working on the street. You know, but there's a knee-jerk reaction where, oh, if you're undergoing some sort of stress, boom, we're going to take your gun away. You know, it really needs to be more on a case-by-case basis. And I think if we had the support of our employer, then by all means, we might start to see more men and women in law enforcement or the first responder world go out and get some help. But listen, that culture, that thought, that resonates through civilian life too.
Everything.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, specifically, like I said, I think for males, you know, it's taboo for a man to reach out and say that I'm having a problem. But the best thing that they could do for themselves and for the people that they love is to get that help. You know, it's like if you had a freaking cold or you had the flu or you had pneumonia, mm-hmm. you're going to go to the doctor and get it treated, because if you leave it untreated, it's going to fester, right? You know, mm-hmm. you throw a freaking a nail gun through your toe and you get gangrene. If it continues to grow and fester, you're going to lose your toe. You can lose your foot. You can lose your calf. You can lose your leg, right? It's the same thing with people that are going through a mental health crisis. The more you let it fester and you don't treat it, and again, there's no rubber stamp treatment, but the more that you let it go untreated, the worse it's going to be.
Well, it should be part of the job, I think, because, you know, you could like address stuff before you have a problem instead of, you know, troubleshooting it. And just like, I think it should be normalized. Like you go to a primary care doctor, you might not necessarily have anything going, but you get like a checkup to make sure everything's okay. It would be nice if that happened with psychologists, you know, therapists and
Yeah,
stuff like that.
sure. Like build it into, whether it's, once a month or, or biannually, however you want to work it, you build it. But I think this too. I think as I'm speaking as an individual now, like I'm not even speaking as a cop. This is like a blanket statement, kind of like for everybody. Our employers can do a better job at promoting this as well. But if we as individuals can take it upon ourselves, right, to take that ownership, take that accountability to every day that we wake up, realize that we have to spend time on ourselves, right? We have to spend time physically on ourselves. We need to spend time mentally on ourselves. We need to spend time spiritually on ourselves. If we could concentrate and strengthen our own physical well-being, our own mental well-being, our own spiritual well-being, that goes a long way. And, our employee, it doesn't matter whether you're a mailman, a garbage man, police officer, firefighter, a surgeon, whoever your employer is, to increase the quality of life for your employee will also help your product, your output, right?
Exactly.
So if you could provide those types of not just services, but opportunities and outlets for your employers to take a few minutes to encourage them to take that time out of their day to strengthen themselves physically, keep themselves physically fit. I mean, there is a unique and a proven correlation between physical fitness, exercise, and mental health, right? So if we could promote that, that goes a long way. But again, it's up to the individual. The person themselves has to bite. They have to buy into that. I had mentioned this yesterday to somebody. I said, listen, I go, there are so many, podcasts. There are so many books. There are so many Instagram accounts and little short clips on YouTube. There are so many memes being thrown around social media. Read them all. That's great. Listen, I'm a firm believer that readers make leaders and leaders are readers, right? But unless you get off your ass and you do something, you're going to be nothing but the greatest reader on the face of the earth. So you have to actually get up and do, as opposed to, listen, read. By all means, read. It's going to broaden your horizons. It's going to make you a sharper thinker. And it's going to make you, I do think that readers are make good leaders, but you have to do. You have to do, and it's
Take action.
totally okay if you wake up in the morning and all you got is like 20% in the tank. Because if you wake up and you go through that day and you gave everything in your time, even if it was just 20%, if you gave it your all that day from morning to night, and you gave 20% of physical fitness, you gave 20% of your attention to your loved ones, your attention to your occupation, you gave 20% to whatever faith that you have, that means that even though you woke up with only 20% in the tank, you gave 100% of what you woke up with. And tomorrow is another day, and you're human. You might wake up feeling like $1 million. You might wake up feeling like a penny. So, like, it's what you, it, it's you, you give whatever you have.
Like our friend Jen just commented, it's okay to not be okay. You're gonna have those days, man.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It's okay to not be, I guess I can't see it here, but it's okay. It is okay to not be okay. That's for sure. We're human, not perfect. It's on the logo, but yeah, I mean, just to have that self-recognition and that's why I love, being a member of a community, whatever community it is, your Roadrunners Club, your book club, Jen's book club, church, school, your whatever, you play bridge with the ladies at night, whatever it is that you're a member of a community, because there are going to be individuals in your community that are going to lean on you when they need it, or you might identify something with them that they don't even know they're going through. You'll see it in them. Or if you're going through a rough time, you could lean on somebody in your community. And that's the whole premise behind what I've had the blessing to start is these two communities, the law enforcement one that I have, and this Project Accounted For community, where you know what, we're just normal people and we're going through life. And you know what? You want to log in there every day to get a little bit of inspiration. That's awesome. We're going to have guys and girls on there too, slapping you across the face to wake you up and say, listen, don't spend 24/7 on social media. Make sure you get up and you go do something too to take care of yourself, because we don't want you to just be the best reader or have the strongest thumbs scrolling through your social media account. We want you to wake up the next day feeling pretty damn good. So take care of yourself too.
Yeah, not even with like besides all the trauma and everything, after 2020, well, even before that, there's been a lot of backlash against the police, thanks to the media. Like, sure, there's like a lot of nasty things that happened, and then the media like twists things on You guys, it makes your job harder.
Listen, the media just sucks altogether for everybody. You know, I have a so there's a guy who's still on the job. His name is Aaron Lohman. When I say on the job, I mean on the NYPD. He's a sergeant in the NYPD. Aaron Lohman, for anybody that's going to be listening at this point of the podcast, his handle on social media, on Facebook and on Instagram, is Huge Fat Loser. I have his book. I know Aaron. We talked. Actually, I talked to him today. But he had an awesome analogy that I couldn't even do it any better if I tried. But he said the media nowadays is just like the casinos, where you're walking in there, they jazz you up, they get your heart rate going, the adrenaline going, they pump oxygen in at you, they have bright lights. It doesn't matter what time of day is, it's bright, it's well lit. You're breathing in this oxygen, there's bells and whistles going off, a lot of flash bait to pull your attention to the left and to the right. You know, but ultimately these casinos, they win. You might win a little bit today, but they're in existence because they're taking mostly everybody's money, right? So the media is the same way. They're gonna flash bells and whistles at you. They're gonna pump oxygen at you. They're gonna feed you with a ton of negative attention, right? And they want that because they want you to come back. They want to feed you with negativity. They want to fire you up so you come back and you continue to watch that day. You turn it back on the next day, and they just control your entire life, right? And the best way to deal with that is to shut it off.
Shut it off,
You know,
exactly.
I mean, if you don't have the ability to shelf it, you know, and to take it for what it's worth, you got to shut it off, because all it's doing for you is there's nothing more contagious than negativity. And listen, the only way to combat that is with communities like yours, Paul, like
Exactly.
this podcast, you know, with your running group, with groups like Project Accounted For, with groups like by following guys like Aaron on Huge Fat Loser, or guys like Reps for Responders that I follow, guys like Big Dick Ballistics. There's a lot of good people out there that they check their ego at the door. They're here to push just a better quality of life, not just for people in the first responder world. Their social media outlets are made public for a reason, because there could be, you know, Joe and Susie from down a block that follow them that could gain from them as well, you know. But being a part of a positive community goes a long way, you know. But we have to be realistic too, you know. You got to pay the bills, so you have to wake up, you have to go to work, right? You want to be a positive member of society, that's great too. But in order to have that longevity, to really make that dash between your birth date and your death date on your gravestone, you know, mean something and be long, you have to get up and take care of yourself, right?
1,000%. Looks like we're starting to run against the clock.
Yeah.
Man, this
Well,
freaking flew by, man.
I know, I know. Yeah, I listen to this. I actually have like a huge list of stuff that I wrote down to talk about. And the only thing that I checked off so far, like mentally, is my parents. So like I got that's about it. You know, we covered my parents, which, and that's a very important topic, especially on my dad's birthday
Where it all
today.
began,
But yeah. So like I just listen, I'm very grateful for the both of you here today. And I know Adriana couldn't be here with us. Like, this platform that you have, Paul, is fantastic. You know, keep doing what you're doing. I'm really blessed for you having me on today. I'm also grateful for the other guests that you have had before me. Those guests, their stories are inspirational, and they've built up the viewership that we have going on right now, right? And those that are going to
Exactly.
come and listen in on Wednesday. So for everybody that
Yes.
was on the either whether it was the Roadrunner or the Inspirational Journeys podcast as a guest, I'm appreciative for your stories, for letting Paul be here today to let me express mine. But if you don't mind, I want to say one more thing.
Oh we got time. Because I still want to do the 22 too many veteran, and we still got our lightning round. So
Oh,
go ahead.
all right. So I wanted to announce on your show, because your show started off by having this, you know, this running community, right? I'm telling a quick little story about like one of my opportunities to express how I've failed forward, right? So back in 2004, a little known fact, I had briefly left the NYPD to go become a New York City firefighter. While I was in the fire academy, one of the tasks is on day three, you have to go through their agility and pass everything, or else they kick you out, right? So like, pass my push-ups, pass my pull-ups. There were some other exercises that we had to do. Passed all those. Then came the mile and a half run, right? And without making the story any longer than it is, I did not come in the appropriate time for my mile and a half run. Within minutes, I was on a van going to Metro Tech Brooklyn to get kicked out of the fire department. It was a blessing in disguise. I made an obstacle into an opportunity. I was able to go back to the police department. I was still very young. I was just 24 years old. And I had the most amazing, blessed career with the NYPD. God had his plan for me. Every day that I worked for the police department was a blessing. I loved it till the day I retired, right? But to present day, I freaking hate running. It is like my arch nemesis. And, you know, for those of you that follow me, you could see recently I've been pounding the pavement a little bit, and it's all by design, right? You know, I really liked just, you know, riding a bike, lifting weights. That was my form of exercise, right? But now I've been taking up running, and there's a reason behind it. And I wanted to announce it on this podcast because of, you know, that's your viewership was based originally off of your running community. So on May 5th at Eisenhower Park here in Long Island, I signed up for, and I'm going to give credit to the guys that pushed me to do it too. I signed up for the Long Island Half Marathon. So I'm going to be running 13.1 miles on May. Actually, let me rephrase that. I'm going to run a little bit, walk a little bit, run a little bit.
Nothing wrong with that. Run, walk.
But 13, you know, maybe a little jog, you know, maybe a little crawl, whatever. If I crawl across the finish line, at least I finish. But my goal on May 5th is to finish, you know, hopefully with a little bit of pep in my step, the Long Island Half Marathon. I'm running this half marathon, and I'm also doing another philanthropic movement for an organization called PS I Love You Day. PS I Love You Day is started by Brooke and Jamie DePalma, their dad back in 2010. He was a New York City police officer. After dropping Brooke off at school, he had gone home and committed suicide. Why I love the PS I Love You Day movement is because Brooke and Jamie immediately within that year decided to take their obstacles and make it an opportunity too. They started the PS I Love You Day campaign, and it's really grown exponentially since 2010, 2011. Their message has spread all across Long Island, where schools from kindergarten to high school and colleges celebrate a PS I Love You Day. And it's really to promote mental health. They don't really hang their hat on the fact that dad, that Joe DePalma was a cop. It's really they're pushing their message out for everybody, for every single citizen, that mental health is health. It's the same as your, whether you've got a cold or stub your toe or you need to get a tooth pulled. So I'm in an effort to support the PS I Love You Day campaign and Brooke and Jamie DePalma's message, I'm going to run this half marathon on May 5th.
That's awesome.
Exactly. So one of my buddies, Mike DiMarino, he runs Deem Fit Clothing Company. He designed this shirt for me to wear today. He designed a sweatshirt that you could actually see me wearing in the presentation that I did at Bay Ridge Catholic. That sweatshirt we're actually going to make available on Tuesday for pre-sale, and it's going to be open to the public to purchase. You could access it on the Deemed Fit website on Tuesday. You'll be able to see links to it on Project Accounted For, my private law enforcement community. I'm going to push it out to them as well. This shirt's going to be available for purchase by the public. Proceeds of the sales of that shirt are going to go directly to the PS I Love You Day campaign. So we're going to have two ways to donate to PS I Love You Day. One's going to be by, we really want to push selling this sweatshirt to get the money off to PS I Love You Day. And then as the race day gets closer, we'll be posting direct links for PS I Love You Day to make direct contributions if we choose to do it that way. So May 5th, we'll be running the Long Island Half Marathon, but more importantly, go out starting Tuesday, buy that sweatshirt, so the proceeds from that sweatshirt sale can go to the PS I Love You Day campaign.
Yeah, I love that. Not long after we met you, you had told me about that. Was it the anniversary? Yeah. And I was sharing it, and I followed them and everything. So I'll definitely help push this.
Yeah, they have I don't remember the exact date, but I think it was February 9th this year, which I think it was a Friday. That was like their PS I Love You Day.
Right.
Some schools though, they've really taken this movement and they've made it a PS I Love You Week. So it really and like I said, I was so fickle, you know, I'm really cynical having 20 plus years in law enforcement. I think everybody's full of shit, right? And I give credit to my girlfriend, Chrissy. She could probably hear me talking through the floor right now. But prior to February, like November, December, leading up to 2024, I was like making fun of the fact that, you know, kids have to go to school wearing purple. Purple is the color that represents PS I Love You Day. And I'm like, oh, it's just another BS thing for the kids to do in school. And Chrissy, she's a teacher herself. She goes, you know, I'm surprised that you're making fun of this. Like, it literally is an organization that stands exactly for what you're doing. And I'm like, what do you mean? So she brought me to the PS I Love You Day website, which everybody here can do. And there's a pretty cool video that they put out explaining their cause. And I watched that video, and I was like, I was eating my own hat. I'm like, wow, I'm a real piece of shit. Like, how did I not? How could I be so anti this movement? It is so. Where I actually went out and I went to a clothing boutique in West Islip, and I picked up my own PS I Love You long sleeve purple shirt, you know? So I got it like two sizes too small, so I looked like Barney walking around town. But needless to say, I bought a purple long sleeve shirt, and I supported them that way. I spoke to Jamie last week. I let her know that moving forward, that we're going to do this fundraiser campaign for her organization. So you'll probably have, like I said, you'll probably have access to buy the sweatshirts Tuesday evening, going all the way up until most likely the day of the race. You can access that link. Paul, I'm sure you'll put it up on your page.
Definitely.
It'll be on Project Accounted For. It'll be in my closed law enforcement group. It'll be on my Instagram, the Project Accounted For Instagram. It'll also be on the Deemed Fit Clothing Company website. So there's a lot of opportunities out there to grab that shirt.
Okay. Awesome. Yep, definitely be sharing that. Yeah, because one of the major backbone parts of the journey of the Roadrunner was the charities. So yeah, that's near and dear to my heart. So oh, maybe I could have them on too. So
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm sure they would love to be on there. They're really good people, and to have an opportunity to get their message out, I think would be great. I could definitely link you up with them.
definitely. Thank
Yeah.
you. All right, that'll bring us to our 22 Too Many veteran. For any new listeners, 22 Too Many is an awesome organization that brings awareness and remembrance to veterans who die of suicide, and they support prevention as well. The 22 stands for the number of veterans who die from suicide each day, and the reports don't even take into consideration the drug overdoses or accidents that weren't really accidents. So you can follow 22toomany.org. That's the numbers 22 and then too many.org. I'll also add the link in the show notes. And today's episode goes out to Cody Hooks. He was in the US Air Force 802nd Security Forces Squadron. So I thought that was appropriate. He was a security police officer. So all right, and his mother wrote this and said, "My son Cody was loved by all who knew him. He never met a stranger. Cody always had a desire to serve in the military since he was little. He was involved in all 4 years of high school in the ROTC program, which is incredible. And in his senior year, he made the highest rank as captain. Upon graduating high school, he joined the US Air Force and served from 2010 to 2013. And he was deployed to Iraq in 2011. And Cody loved spending time with his family and friends. And she said, "I'll never understand why this happened, but we'll forever keep his memory alive and try to help other families cope with the loss of a child. I have joined TAPS, and they have helped me understand more about military suicides. I hope one day the number will be zero and not 22 plus." So,
Yeah, it's a humbling story. I thank him for his service and his family specifically for supporting him through his time that he served our country and what they're enduring right now, as well as it takes a lot of strength just to reach out to you and put his message out there, his story out there, and hopefully that resonates with other veterans in our community to let them know that whatever they're going through in life, the biggest man up thing that they could do is reach out for help, lean on one another. In your darkest days, we'll be here to help you find that resilience. Resiliency is not found at the peaks of mountains; it's found at the depths of the abysses, right? So, but you don't have to be there alone.
Not
There are
alone.
communities just like yours, Paul, like us here, Project Accounted For, and like my closed group that we're here for one another. And just for anybody listening in the Long Island area or the five boroughs area. John Bellico, he's the president of the New York Smoking Shields, which is a cigar club for members of the law enforcement community. They have a facility in New Hyde Park. On April 3rd, John invited me to help co-host an event for active or retired, not just law enforcement officers, but members of the military to come. And we're going to have like a meet and greet session where I'm going to have an opportunity to talk, tell my story, let the guys and girls know who show up there, that there's an active community of people here that you can lean on. We're going to have other members in the mental health professionals or other groups, fitness groups, et cetera, there to chat and be available for those members that show up. Just so your listenership knows, and specifically those of us that are on the Long Island and five boroughs basis, April 3rd, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. in New Hyde Park at Smoking Shields headquarters, active, retired, law enforcement, or military are invited.
Thank you. We're up against the clock. So you want to tell people how they can reach you?
Yeah, sure. So if you want to reach out, you could follow Project Accounted For on Instagram. You just throw Eddie Scally, Project Accounted For, in there on Instagram. It's a public page. Give us a follow. You can reach out to me there, send me a DM, or you can follow us on Facebook, my Eddie Scally Project Accounted For Facebook account. You can find me there, send me an invite, or you could go to our community, our public community, Project Accounted For, on Facebook as well. If there's anybody that wants to reach out that has any questions, shoot me a Facebook message or a direct message on Instagram. Probably the best way to get in touch with me right now. And for now, I have been able to get back to everybody that sends me a message. You know, if this thing takes off, and the group has been growing exponentially, right? If it takes off to a point where I feel like, you know, I'm over my head and I can't reply to you personally, I'm going to be, you know, reaching other endeavors where I'll have other people help assist in answering those calls. But remember, nothing takes away from calling 911 if you're experiencing some sort of real time crisis, right? 911 or the other mental health hot. There are so many out there that you could pick up or text mental health hotlines. So nothing takes away from that, because you might send me a DM on Facebook or Instagram and you're in a crisis and you need help, but I just might not have access to my phone or an alert set. So by all means, if you need help and it's in real time and I don't answer right away, or I would say immediately call 911 or pick up the phone and call those mental health crisis hotlines.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right, Carrie, you want to tell how people can reach you?
Yep. You can reach me on Instagram at running_with_the_rockstar, or on Facebook at Every Run Has a Story.
All right. And then you can find me at The Road Runner. It's RHODE on Instagram and Facebook. Oh, and I should also mention, I signed up for a race.
I saw that. Congratulations.
That's great.
Yeah, like, I was thinking, if, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the Gatsby Days 5K. It's on June 8th, and it's like my old stomping grounds. That's my old neighborhood, mm-hmm. and they have the big Gatsby Days parade every year. So, so I'll be doing that. So it's in Cranston, Rhode Island. So, and I started, I created Team Road Runner, if anybody's wants to join my team, and we can do a little meetup there.
I'm going to try to get down there. I have to look at my schedule and see if I can make it, but it's on my radar. So I'm going to try to get down there for it.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really popular race. Like about 1600 people have been going to that. So it's just before the big parade. It starts at the end of the parade route. So you start the race and it's an out and back, and then you come back and then people are getting ready for the parade, lining up and everything. So so you have a big crowd there.
What date is that?
June 8th. Yep.
That's great.
Yep. So the parade goes from Warwick into Cranston. So the race actually starts in Cranston. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Big party. And then of course for Inspiring Journeys, it's on Inspiring Journeys Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And hopefully I've tried this week to try to get the website posted. It's gonna be inspiringjourneys.net. So I'm finishing setting that up, and a lot of great things coming. We're just getting started, man.
Yeah, that's great, Paul. I thank you, man. And just, right, I know I mentioned earlier, I was going to say who the two guys were that pushed me to run the half.
Oh, yeah.
It's a retired lieutenant from the NYPD, Mike Almonte. He's on Instagram, too. His handle is just a kid from Corona, Lieutenant Mike. I had mentioned to him that I was thinking about running maybe like a 5K, and he goes, 5K? He's like, why don't you do the half? And I'm like, well, I don't know how to back down from a challenge, so I think I'll do it. And then I hung up. I didn't sign up immediately. And then I was mentioning to Craig Siegel that I was going to be signing up for the half. And he's like, do it now or else you're going to regret it. So I freaking signed up right away. So that's, you know, because of Craig Siegel and Lieutenant Mike Almonte, that's why I'm running this half marathon.
Awesome. And then it's not open yet, the signups, but yeah, maybe you could do the Tunnel to Towers in September. I think it's going to be September 29th. So
yeah, I've never done it before, but I have to take a look at those dates and see if I could get over there.
Yeah, that's incredible. And then you're definitely going to have to come back on. So there's like a lot more of that.
Yeah, right.
You need to get on that checklist.
This way we could cover what I have written down.
Yeah. And then we
I
can
know.
try to get.
We're just warming up.
Yep, exactly. We'll try to have Adriana again, then you can bust each other's balls and yeah, it'll
That'd
be a
be
party.
great. That'd be great. I'm not gonna let her live it down that she missed today, that's for sure. Yeah. That'd be busting the chops.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you on.
I appreciate you
Yeah, thanks so
both. You
much.
know, and thank you so much, everybody, especially everybody that was watching it live. We actually had like a few people watch it, so that's awesome.
All
The
right, it's a good
first
start. Yeah,
live,
let's
yeah.
go.
All right, so
All
going up from
right.
here, man. Thank
I
you so
appreciate
much.
everybody for listening. Thank you very
Thank
much,
you,
the two of you, for having
everybody.
me on. Thank you for coming
Hey,
on. This is great. All
yeah.
right. All right. Be well.
Oh, bye.
Fidelis.
And remember,
be excellent to each other. And party on, dude!